No playing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to D20 Dudes, a tabletop role-playing podcast where the die decides our topic. I am Dylan.
And I'm Zam Wow.
And Where's Mr. Zam? Zams. It's Count Zamula there. There's a special guest from another podcast. Aren't you, Zam?
I am. I co-host another podcast called Destination Indie, which is about indie video games.
Such as?
Well, we have an episode coming out any day now where we talk about Chris Tales. And I just finished a whole bunch of games we're going to be talking about, like Tunic and all those. But
is that the game where you can do stuff in the past and future?
Chris Tales? Yes. Yes, it is.
I think I saw my buddy Zach play that for a little bit.
It's, we have a lot to say about it. I'll put it that way. We have a lot to say about it.
All right.
Myself, my co-host, Kylea, and then our producer chimes in every so often.
Oh, you in the magical land of being professional and having a producer and such.
Professional.
And I do all this myself, so you're probably doing better than me.
I got lucky. Good friends.
Good. Good. Today, we shall be speaking upon the land of Tenra. And kind of the general, I've talked about the Tenra setting as kind of a whole, about how like the Shinto priesthood and their weird alien cult fits in, and like the Oni and all that stuff. But today, I want to actually talk about the actual land of Tenra, the five continents that make it up, kind of the seats of power before and after the fall of the Phantom Star and the collapse and all that good stuff, and talk about what the world of Tenra is actually like. Because, as is the case for most things about this game, it's a little crazy. It's a little nonsense. So, as I just mentioned, Tenra is divided into five continents. To go over them quickly, you have Tokiwa, the southern continent, also called the Land of Fire. It is known for torrential thunderstorms during the summer months, and for some reason, just these inexplicable, mysterious artifacts will just wash up on shore, and there's an entire industry based around just kind of trawling around out in the oceans on the end of the southern continent and trying to find these weird artifacts and figure out what they do and what they're for and if they're worth anything. Izumo, the western continent, is for some reason home to the majority of the Ayakashi in Tenra. So that place is just full of monsters. No one's really sure why. And of particular note, the ancient battle of the monstrous nine-headed dragon Yamata no Orochi against the great armor known as Susanoo was historically on Izumo, the western continent.
There was a lot of Naruto names in there.
Well, Naruto's very hyper Japan, and this is like, let's just condense all the weebest shit in the world into one game, and that's what Tenra is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
So Hidakami is the eastern continent. It is very rough terrain, comprised mostly of dense forests, high mountains, and because of that, there is very little technological expansion out in the region. Just because it's real hard to get out there. And of note, this place has some places that kind of don't really follow the rules of the Shinto priesthood, and you know, a few societies that actively rebel against the Shinto priesthood, because it's so hard to get a foothold out there that once they do, the priesthood can try and go out there and take their guns and their women's and their whatever, but they're so entrenched, it's like, come at me, bro. You can't do diddly. And they can't. Diddly cannot, in fact, be done because of how dense the forests and high the mountains and such are. Then we have Yashima, the central continent. It is the birthplace of all humans in Tenra, where they descended from the stars. Cough, cough, space elevator from their giant spaceship. Cough, cough, cough. And is the political and social heart of Tenra, as well as the staging ground for the ongoing internal wars of the Shinto priesthood. And then there is Edo, the impure land, which is basically Hyper Japan's version of Australia, where they just kind of decided to huck all the criminals into this one tiny continent kind of off to the southeast, and they just kind of lost control of things. So now you've just got this continent full of crazy assholes who are constantly at war with each other over things like territory and like big gang sizes and things of that nature. And like samurai and yoroi armor pilots and stuff will often go there because it's so chaotic and so constantly entrenched in war that they'll just like hang out in that place as training. Like, let's just let every criminal in the world come and try and kick my ass right now and see how far I get. And that's the extent of my training. That's what they do there.
Looks like the, you ever seen The One from Jet Li?
Is that the one where he's like traveling between parallel realities and killing himself to gain power?
Yes. Yes.
A long time ago, I saw that.
At the end, the like bad version of him that's killing all the other ones gets trapped in like a prison reality. And he's just stuck on top of a pyramid fighting all of these other prisoners who come charging at him. That sounds like that.
Which seems like it would just be fun for him. I think that's what he wants to do, is just kick ass forever.
I think so too.
Now, in the center continent, the central continent of Yashima, you have various states of political power, both before and after the collapse of the Phantom Star that basically destroyed everything. So this is going to be like wherever in the timeline you decide you want to put your game. It will either have more or less relevance. Before the collapse, you had Kishu, the land of the Oni, because there's a ton of Oni there. It's where most of the heart engines are made. And there are six domains in Kishu. You have Kaira, Koroshiki, Ryuko, Kasanagi, Magatsuno, and Kikoku. And there's kind of a gradient of this place has more humans, so it's very hostile towards the Oni that live there, to this place has a lot more Oni, and most of the humans who live there are friendly with the Oni and realize that they aren't horrible, terrible monsters. And it's really kind of like pick a side whenever you get to Kishu, because once you enter that domain, the Oni are a part of your life and you get to deal with that one way or another. There is Ryuenshu, which is called the Dragon Scale Territories because there is just a huge stretch of mountains that they kind of look like big barbed scales. Especially from high up, where, you know, the Shinto priesthood has, like, big old flying airships and floating castles and such. And it is ruled by... there's one, two, three, six. Six different territories in Ryuenshu, and each one is ruled by a regent that has a very strong and very weird personality. So there's kind of been, like, a political stalemate kind of in the heart of things. Because there's just a bunch of weirdos who refuse to back down on anything in control of everything over there. No one can really get a foothold. Sirenshu, the Western Isles, is a collection of island nations that are... It's roughly six land masses. And since they're so separated by the sea, they're actually one of the most peaceful sets of nations. Just because they're not going to build a bunch of boats to go try and fight each other. That's like a waste of time and energy. We got plenty of fish. No one's bothering us. Leave us alone. That's kind of their philosophy. Nanboshu, the Iron Ridge, is a long landmass in the south, very wedge-shaped. It is divided by the high, treeless peaks of the Kaina Mountain Range, which stretch out from the center of the land, and there are eight countries in the Iron Ridge. The land is a hotbed of strife and war, and the borders of the countries are constantly changing because they are kicking each other's asses all the time. There is Sunaishu, the cradle, which is a land of prairies and I'm having such trouble talking today. I got the square brains. Gently sloping hills, and is the geographical and political center of Tenra. It is the dead center of Tenra. It is where Mount Jinrai is. It is where Hoga, the head of the Phoenix sect of the Buddhist temple, is. And four other countries that all have incredible political and socioeconomic wealth and how they reach the rest of Tenra. Like, basically all roads lead to Sunaishu. It's like every road leads to Rome, but Japanese style. Then there's Tishu, the land of woe, surrounded by the sea on three sides. This is made up of five countries and is a political powder keg, so saith the book, and is the most unstable region in all of Tenra. though there are no huge battles happening currently, save for a bloody civil war happening in Kagri, the countries of this region are always in political hot water. And that is why it is called the Land of Woe. Because, wow, that's a lot of war. That's funny.
Clever. Fuck you. I laughed.
Toshu, the eastern land, is surrounded by the Yaosu mountain ranges in three directions and is made up of huge prairies. The domains of Toshu are isolated by the mountains from their neighboring territories, so there are rarely attacks in the area either in or out. However, they are almost always at war over new territory, because if new land is found anywhere, boy howdy doesn't everyone want it, because they have very limited space. And they also have a high density of mines for, like, precious metals, soul gems, and scarlet steel. This was all before the collapse. This is, like, the whole center continent is just a hotbed of political ouchies. It's the land of oof. And then, just to add insult to all that injury, space fell on it. Outer space fell on it and blew everything to shit.
Sure.
So all that stuff that I just mentioned is pre-collapse. As I mentioned in the Shinto priesthood episode, there was a bridge to heaven, quote unquote, which I am fairly certain was a space elevator, that at some point was destroyed and a large piece of it fell into the whole Yashima region and just blasted it to shit, basically made a whole bunch of it a crater. So post-collapse, you have the dragon scale territories of Ryu and Shu, lost its regents and most of its land. The whole place is in chaos. All of it's in civil war. The northern priesthood made Ryu and Shu and the territory of Oga into the seat of their power. And a lot of these political conflicts, kind of on the small scale, ended very quickly whenever, because, you know, all the regents died and the new head of the northern court of the Shinto priesthood is here. They just appointed a bunch of new regents to the region to kind of settle everything, and in a bloody war, just kind of put everything down, like refuse to let everything destabilize by using bloody action. But the peace does not seem to be lasting, and there is bloody war on the horizon because one of those regents, Hakusen, is mobilizing for a large-scale war, and every region except for Oga appears to be a target, and it's, you know, really hard to target the Shinto priesthood, especially the Northern Court, specifically because they live in a giant flying castle in the sky, and, like, literally, what do you even do about that?
Enjoy it.
Look at it from afar and see. See, then cope.
Right.
The Western Isles were completely obliterated with the fall of the Phantom Star. There are two tiny little territories left. But even what is left was, like, just lambasted. Like, there were tsunamis, flooding, earthquakes in the aftermath of the falling of the Phantom Star. There's barely anybody left. It was just blasted down to hell. The Iron Ridge wasn't directly affected by the fall of Mount Jinrai and the collapse of the Phantom Star, but the interdomain wars, especially those within the region, now getting progressively worse due to all the chaos, mean that there is just complete lawlessness in the region. Like, almost nobody can get anything under control, and because it's so hard to invade because of the mountain range, no one can really do anything about it. It's basically become a territory of bandits. The Cradle, during the fall of Mount Jinrai, Kirai, Miyasuzu, and Hoga, once the centers of culture and society in Tenra, were also completely annihilated. The northern half of the region sank into the sea. The former domain of Hinomori was renamed New Jinrai and was set to be the priesthood, the southern court of the priesthood's new capital. And there's currently a lot of wars between the domains of the Cradle and the Dragonscale territories and the islands left between them, because this is, like, the direct clash between the northern and southern courts in the Cradle.
This makes sense.
The Land of Woes still sucks. Nothing really changed there. It's just still awful.
Oh.
The eastern lands, the domain of Kagri in Toshu, not to be confused with the similarly named domain of Kagri in Gishu, and the border between the Eastern Lands and the Oni Lands sank into the sea with the impact of the Phantom Star, and the Phoenix Buddhist sect claimed political power in the sharded country. The shattered country of Togo, and moved the head of their temple there. The former domain of Kikoku was destroyed during the Maku Nindo revolt, Maku Nindo being a very prominent Oni who decided enough is enough, and he's just going to start taking political power away from the Shinto priesthood because they have been oppressed and murdered for their literal hearts for far too long. A new country rose from the ashes, ruled entirely by the Oni and for the Oni. Some people in the priesthood are attempting to invade in order to secure themselves a new source of heart gems, but they have not been successful.
Hmm.
Any questions so far, Professor Zamlet?
Hey, I just want to say, in the land of woe, after the collapse, you said everything's still terrible there. But apparently the civil war in Kagari ended, so...
Oh, no. Oh, that's you got
one,
me.
That's one good thing.
One less civil war in the land of civil wars. You got me. How could I be so negligent?
Bright side.
So, this gives a bit of small history, as well as kind of providing an overview of the land of Tenra. There's like a weird amount of information spread throughout the books. Like I've mentioned before, I love Tenra. Tenra's dope. It's a great system, and I encourage literally anybody and everybody to try it, especially with everything that's going on with the OGL and all the nonsense that's caused. Try some new games. Oh, yeah. Try Tenra. Tenra's dope.
Tenra's super fun. It is super fun. I got to play in a game that you ran, and we had a blast.
It's a great time because it's so much focus on like the players and how they interact with the world. And I love that about it. But I will say about these books, they're not terribly well organized. Whoa. In fact, they're kind of terribly organized. So there's lots of different little tidbits of information about like the land of Tenra and the way it works kind of spread throughout the book instead of in one place where it's all relevant. And that's very annoying because like you've got all this stuff here about the different continents and kind of some of the history here, and then it's like now you need to read this whole section on the Shinto priesthood and kind of how it works before you can get to, well, here's the trade routes on those continents we mentioned a whole chapter back, which really seems poorly organized to me.
Yeah,
it's very silly.
It was rough to get into because of how crazy it is, even with the shorter versions of the books. It's just,
which is really a shame,
all over.
Because like it's all very cool information. They do a lot of world building, and I really like it. So you really just you could organize it a bit better, guys.
Right. I mean, I got to play as a warrior with a giant sword. There was a chainsaw sword, and it exploded. Talked with a surfer voice. It was amazing. System's great. It's rough to get into. It's hard to get into, but once you're into it and start playing around with it, you go, "Oh, all right."
Yeah, it's like weird because like it's not even necessarily that most of the systems are terribly complex. It's just that they're organized so poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, and the fact that it is so different from games like Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder, that the combination of it being so wildly different than what people are used to and the poor organization, like you're going to have the best time if you have someone to teach you how to play the game.
Absolutely.
Which is why I'm constantly trying to run one-offs. I want to teach new people how to play this game because it's worth the try. It's really a fun system. It's just rough to read this book. And I don't know if that's like a translation error or what's going on there, but dang.
You know who I think would really like this system?
Who do you think would really like this system?
I bet Caleb from the Trailblazer Network would love this system.
Man, I am 100% certain Caleb would adore this system.
Wild.
Glare.
We love you, buddy.
So, all Trailblazers buds, if you listen to this episode, at Caleb. Just add him and tell him to play Tenra. Let's bully him into this. I've been trying for years.
Do it.
Ooh. So the land of Tenra, in terms of its development, kind of its land, its level of technology and stuff, it's very bizarre because the system as a whole is meant to play like very feudal era Japan. The vast majority of people are like farmers who will farm in these big rice paddies or in these big open like grain fields and things of that nature. They give the majority of their rice to the local lords. They grow some other vegetables to kind of subsist on. Everything's kind of done for the sake of the regents. People can be conscripted into the military at any time. And it's really meant to be like, here's kind of this facsimile of what it was like in Japan in like the early parts of the millennia.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the Shinto priesthood who are like, bow before me, peasants, in my giant anti-gravity floating castle covered in guns. My robots, who are made out of the souls of the greatest fighters in the known world, are now watching you. And if you do anything out of line, we're going to beat you into submission with our giant robots that are piloted by children.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge disparity. So you've got kind of like, your cities can run the gamut anywhere from like, here is a small farming community to here's kind of a early Japanese style large settlement where you got kind of walls and like the local shogunate and that kind of stuff to here is this big sprawling cyberpunk city that is ruled by the Shinto priesthood where they manufacture weapons and armor and people there live in excess and luxury because they can do things like use robots to pull materials out of the ground instead of like forced labor from peasants and such. It's very bizarre in that way, in that like you could build either one of these cities and they are both equally at home in the setting, just depending on who is in power in what region. In terms of like the power structure, you've got really the Shinto priesthood is sitting at the very tip top. They choose who's in charge in the various countries. So you have the five continents that we mentioned. Each one of these continents is divided into various territories, and the territories are kind of just like, these are the general geographic features of the region. And whenever those geographic features undergo a massive shift, well, this clearly has to be a different territory because it's not the giant mountain that you just left. And then those territories are divided into domains or kingdoms or what have you. And the regents of those domains are appointed by the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the extent of the power pyramid here. You know, you got the regents, like they can have their, of course, retainers and vassals and such that may rule things on a lower level. But for the most part, like that's as low as it goes. It's if you don't obey the shogun, you get decapitated. Now go have fun in your little farming village somewhere in the middle of the mountains where bandits might go and attack you. We're not going to help.
Yeah, of course not. That makes sense. Yeah. Good luck. Have fun. Don't die.
Good luck.
Or do. I don't care.
Doesn't affect me as long as the rice harvest comes in. Now, because you've got such a vague set of like hierarchy here, it really lends to that same thing that Tenma really does everywhere, where it's just kind of like you're really just meant to fill in the gaps however you want to. Take any kind of part of like that Japanese like hyper anime culture that you want and just kind of insert it somewhere. The continents and these different territories and stuff, as always, are really just guidelines, stuff for you to kind of take Tenra and build it into your own world, make it your own, which is what I've done. I've talked a lot about this.
Yep.
I've talked maybe too much about this.
I mean, I don't think so.
You don't?
Nope.
Do you think I'm cool?
I think you're amazing. How about that?
Whoa. Whoa.
Dylan, you're a good dude. And you're so passionate, especially about like the system and just how open and free it can be. Even with, you know, the history and the rules and everything in there. But at the same time, like you said, it's so malleable. It's great. And it definitely inspires to want to at least look into it more.
Yeah. And there is so much to look into. Like, it is weird that you have this whole chapter on the Shinto priesthood between the land of Tenra, and then like going into the domains and the regents and kind of like what life is in it. Like that's a bizarre choice. But once you get into like, here's what it's like to travel the land of Tenra, here's what the roads are like and things of that nature. Like, it's very cool to read these. Because like traveling in Tenra can actually be very prohibitive. You've got these major trade roads, and there's one going north south, and there's one going east west. These massive trade roads that span all five continents, pretty much, with boats and stuff in between. Traveling can still be very prohibitive because money is not something that most people are going to have. It's really going to be like the regents and the retainers and the vassals and stuff that have any kind of money, because they're the only ones who have so much wealth that carrying around all these material goods is going to become a horrible inconvenience. So it's really only them who are going to carry around coinage, who are going to carry around like banknotes and things of that nature to purchase other goods and services. Otherwise, you basically have to be sent on an errand. Like, somebody else has to give you a pass, because if you start traveling along these roads and you hit one of these checkpoints, you can't pay any kind of toll. And if you don't have a pass that says like, hey, this is my message from this regent and we're on good terms with this other regent I'm traveling to, they're just going to say, no, turn around, get out of here. You could be a spy. You could be here to destabilize our economy or whatever the hell. And there are three types of travel passes, actually. There's one called the standard travel pass, which is issued by government offices in each domain, and they can be purchased for about 10 mon, which Japanese currency, like, I'm not going to go terribly far into that because I don't even know all that much. But they're generally only used on like a same day basis kind of thing. So it's like, I want to leave the region, so I'm going to buy this travel pass and this will get me past the checkpoint so I can move on to the next location. Temple passes are issued by the Phoenix and Bright Lotus religious sects of the Buddhist temples. And they allow for interdomain travel. However, receiving a temple or a temple travel pass requires both time and effort, because they are not issued to anybody who is not part of one of these Buddhist sects, usually. So, like, you either have to be one of the Buddhist monks traveling for their purposes, or they gotta really like you.
Yeah.
And then there's the priesthood heavenly passes, also known as the Amafuda passes, which are available in two varieties. There's one from the Northern Court and one from the Southern Court, and they allow complete freedom of movement in the domains under the influence of the issuing court of the Shinto priesthood. Very difficult to get your hands on.
I like this. I like this note on here about how there's no roads or cities on the maps.
Yep. So that you are meant to populate shit entirely yourself. And that's cool.
It's great.
Just awesome.
Do you need a road there? Put it there. Do you need a road to not be there? Then don't put it there.
Doesn't exist. Plop a mountain in that bitch. Who cares? I like that kind of freedom of it. Now, it's also to be known that traveling is not only prohibitive because of these checkpoints and who knows how you're going to get a pass and how far that's going to get you and such, so forth. It's also because Tenra's at war constantly. There's almost no peaceful relations between domains in Tenra because everybody wants what everyone else has. And you have these varying levels of, here's this regent who has a yoroi armor under his employ from the Shinto priesthood. Here's this 9-year-old girl who's got a kill count probably higher than she knows how to count to. And you have that going up in battle against, here's this other regent who has this domain that's like 6 times as large, and he has an infantry force that is absolutely massive. There's such power differential there that even should you have the superior weapons, it could literally be that your next door neighbor just has these obscene numbers that they can go up against you with. And like, what are you going to do about that? Yeah, maybe you're going to cut down the first 10 battalions, but that 11th just managed to get that rocket launcher shot off. Who knows where they bought that rocket launcher from? Because that dude's clearly a farmer. He's literally eating a beet right now. But he had a rocket launcher, and he managed to hit your Yoroi armor's booster, so it's not up in the air, out of everyone's reach anymore. And now they're just going to sit there and beat it with their shovels until it breaks. Tenera gets nuts. So even if you can travel, may not necessarily be the safest thing to do so. And that's assuming that with a standard travel pass, that you can even get anywhere within 24 hours. Because the land of Tenera is so underdeveloped in a lot of places that you can walk for a full 24 hours and not see anyone. Because you're having to walk across this massive prairie and no one settled there. And no one's going the other way. Who knows when you'll see another human being? I hope you packed plenty of food, my friend. You're not going to find anything out here.
Just wild.
It is. And I could talk about this all night. But I have already exhausted all my time being very passionate about this. It feels like 5 minutes have gone by and it's been 30.
Oh my gosh, it has. Wow.
It has.
That went fast.
It did go fast. So do you have any final thoughts, questions, anything that you want to ask or add?
Look into Tenera. The books are just like out there, right?
Sort of. I know a lot of people are spreading PDFs around, and I definitely share the ones I have, but I did buy mine. And so I feel comfortable sharing mine. Like, if you join the Discord, I've got a pinned thing leading to where I have all of the PDF Tenera books just kind of hanging out where anyone can download them. I'm sure the publishers would be absolutely delighted to hear that. But if no one knows this game exists, they're not going to buy the books anyway, right?
Exactly.
And they're so I've really been trying to get that word out there.
The art in the book is so pretty.
It's so good. I love the limited edition books and how awesome they are. The super dope hardbacks. If you do buy the books, you do get the PDFs with them, no matter which version you get. So you can get like the standard edition or the limited edition ones, and you get the PDFs.
Heck yeah!
To share with family and friends. Very good stuff. And I think like the hard or the soft cover set. The standard, it's like $50 for both the rule book and the world book, which isn't bad.
Yeah, not at all.
Considering it's like fucking 600 pages of shit.
Hell yeah.
Big long. So thank you, everybody, for listening. You can find us at D20Dudes on Twitter, twitter.com/D20Dudes, however you want to do that. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/D20Dudes. And if you want to join the Discord, a link for that is down in the description. And Zam, what was your podcast again?
Destination Indie. We're on Twitter at Dest Indie. And you can find me, myself, and I at Zam Wow on Twitter as well.
And you're also in my Discord. So if you want to hang out with him, you can come pop into our Discord and say hi.
I'm there.
He there. So now we are going to roll that beautiful bean footage and see what next week's episode is going to be about. I have rolled a 6, which was going to be the same number that we rolled for this week's. And I haven't repopulated that list yet. So here we go. Rolling again.
Nailed it.
Rolling with advantage. Dang it. Of course it went off the table.
Do I need to get you a dice tower?
I've got a thing. I just never use it. We are going to be talking about one of the playbooks from... what's the name? Blades in the Dark. Goodness. I rolled 11 for those weirdos who were keeping track of what numbers I've been rolling for each episode. It's 11, the playbook for the slide, which I can't remember which one that is right off the top of my head. I think they are a deceiver, a con man sort of person.
That's cool. That's such a neat system.
Blades in the Dark is also super. Blades in the Dark was a very strong contender to being my favorite next to Tenera. I got real close to taking that number one slot. So thank you for listening, everyone. We will catch you in next week's episode and talk to you later. Bye-bye.